Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by Lockwood Phillips, and we'll be having our weekly discussion of world affairs. Of course, Las Vegas was high on the agenda. And if you want a good example of the mentality faced by the gun control lobby in the United States, then just listen to our first discussion. Enjoy.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Just a reminder at the outset of the program, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleep schedule, which I do appreciate. It's nearly midnight as we are in his hometown of London as we begin the program this evening here on Viewpoints. And of course, with Viewpoints Around the World, Tom Arms joining us. Tom, good, well, afternoon now, but evening as we proceed into the conversation. And what's the weather like in London, just very quickly?
It's very nice. It's got a lovely autumnal feel to it, but the sun is still shining. The leaves are starting to fall. It's very pleasant.
Now, with that said, is this seasonal? Is this what you would normally expect?
Absolutely.
All right. More power to you. At least we seem to have gotten past the heat of the summer and possibly storms of the fall season for us along coastal North Carolina. And of course, the United States, including Texas, as a matter of fact. With all that said, Tom, I guess the top of the mind awareness would be on the issues in the United States right now. I'm guessing that what happened in Las Vegas is sort of leading the news in Europe, or is it something else?
You have guessed correctly. Give that man a panda bear.
Thank you. And what have they been saying about that? What has been the coverage?
Well, it's been absolutely wall-to-wall coverage.
Mm.
It's front page, it's lead item in all the news broadcasts. Everyone is focused on it. And everyone is appalled by it, of course. Their heart goes out to all those people who were involved in the concert. But what they can't understand, and they just can't get their head around, the opposition to gun control laws in the States. They just can't get their head around to why Americans are so opposed to it.
But, you know, I understand that. But, you know, I was reading an article earlier today in the Washington Post about this, and it noted that, as a matter of fact, the individual was commenting that they had originally been gun control supporters, and they did more research and discovered several things about the issue of guns and made comment about the fact that gun control didn't do much for the situation in France. There with the bloodshed initiated there at the nightclub in Paris. And we've seen where people can do evil things with or without weaponry, be it knives, vehicles, or explosives. So, we appreciate that. But, you know, here in the States, we see it elsewhere in the world, and we recognize that we're not alone. What's interesting here about this, and I just want to get a quick observation on this from you, Tom, is the fact that this seemed to have no ideological component, at least at this moment, does not seem to have any ideological component. Isn't that somewhat of a surprise?
No, really? Because I think if you look at most of the homicides in the States, they don't have an ideological component.
Okay.
It's a very small fraction that can be linked to actual terrorism. But you talk about, I don't have figures for France. I have figures elsewhere. And I've got figures for ownership and homicides.
Mm-hmm.
And in the U.S., the homicides per 100,000 are 4.1.
Mm-hmm.
As 4.1 people are killed every year for every 100,000 in the population.
Mm-hmm.
In Norway, it's 0.1.
All right.
In Canada, it's 0.3. In Australia, it's 0.14.
In the UK, it's 0.06.
Okay.
And Japan, it's 0.0.
All right. So your point is, just out of curiosity.
Now, wait a minute. Let me go over the gun ownership figures.
Oh, wait a second. Homicides. We have a high degree of homicides. And unfortunately, we've seen this predominantly in metropolitan communities. But my question to you is, so, without getting into the editorial side of this, what is the description here? Is this a matter of purely guns, or are we talking homicides? Because you have homicides in all these
countries. These are homicides with guns.
Okay, but you have homicides in countries that use products other than guns, possibly knives, clubs, whatever.
Yep. So, I think you have to accept.
No.
And I don't have the figure here. I did have it earlier in the year. There are more homicides in the United States, whether it's by gun, whether it's by knife, per 100,000 than any other developed country in the world. I think by a factor of about 4.
That is an acceptable description, homicides in general. And that is a concern that we have discussed here on our program, Viewpoints. And Tom Armes, of course, with Viewpoints Around the World. You know, yes, we have some concerns associated with homicides. I don't know that those homicides would be any lower with or without gun control. That's number one. And the other aspect, in many instances in other countries, we have to question, how are those homicides reported? We just happen to have a very good police and investigative system in the United States.
I think they do here in the UK, and I know they do in Norway and Canada and Australia and Japan.
Okay, but wait. One other aspect of this. In three of those countries, very homogenous population. And this may change now that you're seeing more refugees and immigrants moving into those countries where there are social and cultural differences.
It's been dropping.
It's more power to them. I don't think that that has anything to do with gun control. I want to move on. But there is full coverage of what's going on in Las Vegas.
Oh, absolutely. And as I said, the other thing, the Guardian, I think, made a big point of, that this is going to be a big test for Trump.
Okay, really?
Because he's tacked his flag very, very closely, very strongly to the gun control lobby.
Well, yes, and I will tell you.
Or not to the NRA.
Well,
to the NRA.
That's fine.
And this is going to be his first test of that.
Well, I don't know that this will necessarily be the first test, but okay. I appreciate the report there from The Guardian. Pardon me. Tom Armes, of course, of LookAheadNews.com, LookAhead Radio, with us this afternoon. We're chatting with him about events around the world, but we started off with an observation about the coverage of the United States on the issue of Las Vegas. I did see another story, and I want to touch on this very quickly, Tom, and this related to France. And in fact, apparently President Macron is seeking to expand legal and judicial actions against possible terrorists. And I'm in the process of reading the story in the Washington Post, which, well, may or may not be classified as fake news, but I don't think it is. In the story, it was noted that the French have been under a state of emergency now for 2 years, and I need to correct myself. I think it was actually the New York Times where I read this story. I did not know France was still under the state of emergency, and I wonder, are other countries in Europe still in the same capacity?
No, I think it's only France, and it was renewed every 3 months. Now, funnily enough, Macron, as part of his campaign, said he would be lifting it.
Mm-hmm.
He would be lifting the state of emergency. Instead, he said, no, we're going to have it for at least another 2 years. And it's looking as, you know, the temporary has become almost the permanent.
Now, is this because of fear of growing terrorism? I mean,
yes, it's completely related to terrorism. France has a very large Islamic community. And it's one which is not treated very well.
Okay.
And never has been historically. So they've got a lot of dissatisfaction among their Islamic community in France. Now, what the measures are is that Under the new law, they will allow the police to conduct house raid and searches without a warrant or judicial oversight.
Mm-hmm.
It also gives extra powers to officials to place people under house arrest without the normal judicial process.
Wow.
And the bill also allows for restrictions on gatherings and closures of places of worship, which means effectively closing mosques.
You know, it is interesting. I got to bring this back to the issue of the homicides in the United States. I will also say that in the United States, we do not see our military walking the streets. Now, I know that is to be the case in France and some other countries. We have the police that are in charge of that. It is a different environment totally. And I might also add, in light of the experience with France and other areas of the country, Barcelona just recently, the issue of terrorism is very obvious and present in those countries. So it is an interesting story, one that we don't get a lot of coverage on. Very quickly, before I go to the break, how is this being received in France?
Well, a lot of people are opposed to it. You know, I mean, the liberal people, liberals like myself, the loony London liberal, are opposed to it. They think it would just create more problems, that the Muslim community will fight against it. There'll be a backlash against it.
You know, but
it remains to be seen. You know, I mean, obviously, it's a gift in a way to people like Al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. who will point towards it and say, you're hated in France. Do something about it.
Wow.
And there'd be an element of that.
Okay. Well,
it remains to be seen whether or not the crackdown will have the effect that the authorities want, or whether, in fact, there'll be a backlash against it and it will have the exact opposite effect.
Okay. And one other quick question. I did see there's legislation being, and you may or may not have a great deal of details on this, and I don't want to get into a great deal of depth on this, but I think it was in the UK where there is the prospect of some action, legal action, against those who either perpetrate or view terrorist videos. Am I correct on that? Do you know much about that?
Yes. Yes. Okay. There is legislation on that. And I don't have the details of that. You're quite right. But I do know that there is some legislation going through the Commons on that.
Okay. And that's just legislation. So in essence, it's any number of things that have been proposed. I just thought it would be worthy of note. I don't think it's necessary to take time out on that particular topic. You're listening, of course, to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms with LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 9th of October. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. The outcome of the battle over America's Iran policy should be known next week, with a statement expected from President Trump on Thursday and a deadline on Sunday. Will he take the advice of European allies and his defense secretary and renew the Iran nuclear agreement, or fulfill his campaign pledge to revoke the worst deal ever? Washington will also host the annual IMF World Bank Summit next week, with world finance ministers pleased about global growth projections but worried about Africa and the rising consumer debt in Britain and America and rising business debt in China. The Catalonian president may choose Columbus Day, which is also Spain's national day, to unilaterally declare independence from Spain. The move would add insult to injury following the recent referendum vote. Belgium marks the 100th anniversary of the World War I Battle of Passchendaele on Monday. On hand will be Britain's Prince William, Belgium's Princess Astrid, and the Governor General of New Zealand. The battle was the worst in New Zealand's military history, with 2,375 New Zealand soldiers killed. Another anniversary is 50 years since the death in Bolivia of Cuban revolutionary Che Guevara. The anniversary has become a political football in Bolivia. Left-wing Bolivian President Evo Morales is opting for celebrations, and the conservatives are opposing him. Elsewhere in South America, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is staging delayed regional elections on Sunday. Austria is expected to elect its youngest ever chancellor, Sebastian Kurz. On the same day, Liberia will replace Africa's only woman president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, and Kyrgyzstan votes to replace their president, Almazbek Atambayev. The German state of Lower Saxony will hold regional elections on Sunday, and observers will be watching to see if the far-right Alternative for Deutschland continues to rise. Australia's High Court rules on Tuesday whether or not dual citizens can sit in Parliament. The future of Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's government could depend on the verdict, as his deputy is a dual national. In the EU, there's another round of Brexit talks and meetings of ministers responsible for agriculture, fisheries, justice, immigration, and environment. Books are a big topic. On Tuesday, Ivanka Trump publishes her book on raising the president's three eldest children. And Hillary Clinton goes on a book tour which takes her to London and Frankfurt for the world's largest book fair. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Again, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, very interesting aspects about what we were chatting about a few moments ago related to safety and security of people and, of course, the concerns associated with Las Vegas, but also the experiences there in France, Spain, well, and the United Kingdom, but around the world in general related to terrorism. Let's talk about a few other items. One that comes close to this, and I frankly kind of a interesting issue, one that many of us here in the States don't understand, Catalonia and a secession movement in Spain. We chatted about it briefly last week, but this is really now beginning to gain momentum apparently in Spain, and the Spanish government has reacted. Let's bring us up to date on that.
Well, as we speak, the Prime Minister of Catalonia is preparing to give a speech in Barcelona, at which he is expected to declare unilateral independence from Spain. It should be in about 3 or 4 hours.
Wow. What does this mean? What? First off, we know very little. I know very little about Spain. I should not speak for the audience. But tell us something about Spain. Why this movement? What's this all about?
Well, Spain, Spain is not the homogeneous unit that people think. I think seven different regions which have some sort of autonomy. There are 17 autonomous regions. What am I saying? Not seven, 17.
Really?
And out of those 17 have separatist movements who actually actively campaign to break away from Spain. There are five official languages. There are three other languages that are recognized but not used in official documents. And there are four other unofficial languages. So this is not one great big homogenous country the way a lot of people in America think it is.
Interesting.
And there's a constant battle going on between the regions and the central government in Spain over how much independence the different regions should have.
What does this do to, and we're going to get to the issue of Brexit, the European Union, and also, well, the debt that Spain as a country faces or faced at one point? It had significant financial challenges. What, you know, how do you parse that out if there is this secession? Who's responsible for what? Things of this nature.
Let's deal first with Catalonia, where Barcelona is located. It's a very rich part of Spain, a very rich region.
Okay.
Roughly 20 to 25% of all of Spain's GDP comes from Catalonia. Its biggest port is in Barcelona. If Barcelona breaks away or Catalonia breaks away, then Spain is going to lose that contribution to its economy.
Mm.
So that's number one. Number two, it is Spain, not Catalonia, who is a member of the EU.
Right.
So if Catalonia breaks away, it will have to apply for membership of the EU. It needs membership of the EU to survive politically and economically. the government Madrid has said well in advance, we will veto your membership of the EU, which it can do under EU rules. So, and it's made it clear that it will do that with any other region which tries to break away.
What does this do to, if you will, the European unity effort? Now, I'm talking about not only the European Union, but I'm talking about, well, Western culture, the whole military environment there. Spain has been part of NATO. What happens there? Do we have any idea?
It certainly won't help the European movement.
No.
I mean, I see it. I wrote a column last week in which I referred to identity crisis going right around the world. And I think what you have is this increase in globalization, which I don't think anyone can stop. I think we're headed in that direction. We can't stop it. It's like holding back the tide of history.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a backlash from nationalist movements, people who are afraid of losing their identity. And Catalonia, the Kurds, the Basques, they're all part of it. All the countries, Italy has a movement. Britain has a movement, you know, with the Scots, the Bretons in France. All these would be encouraged by what is happening in Catalonia.
You know,
and it would be, as I said, a backlash against globalization.
It will be a backlash against globalization. Got a quick question. Of course, we're going to get into this related to Brexit in a few moments because we brought up the European Union. I'm curious, does Russia see this as an open opportunity for their participation or involvement in breaking up what has been a major homogenous movement in Europe? Very quickly, is this something that Russia benefits from?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I mean, certainly during the Cold War years,
yep.
The Soviets would regularly exploited any independence movements. You know, they supplied arms to the IRA, mm-hmm. and to the Basques and everyone else. And it certainly, you know, Russia would encourage any independence movements. They don't want a homogenous Europe. It's not in their interest.
Interesting. And of course, curious how world leaders very quickly are responding to this. Germany, France, the United Kingdom. How are they responding to this movement just in Spain alone?
Well, so far they're keeping a fairly low profile. But of course, you know, the British have the problem of Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in Catalonia are watching the Scottish referendum when it took place a couple of years ago. You know, almost all the European leaders would support the Madrid government, but they think it's going about it the wrong way.
Interesting. All right.
What's going to happen? They're coming down with a very hard fist. They are effectively planning to occupy Catalonia with the military.
Yes.
A bit like the American Civil War.
Yes, we've been paying close attention to that. And as a matter of fact, the army has, and I think, went to one step to even close the polls for the votes for this. And they have threatened basically arrest for certain leaders in this.
Well, they have arrested them. And I think about on the polling day, which was held on Sunday, I believe 500 people at least were injured.
Right.
It was quite a riot. And that has only strengthened the feelings of the Catalans.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. I've got to go to a break. We're going to get back to this in a moment. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. A portion of this program has been pre-recorded. Of course, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. This portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, very interesting story you just shared with us about what's happening in Spain and Catalonia. And I'm intrigued that you're called the Catalans. Is that correct? Catalans?
Yeah, they're either called Catalonians or Catalans.
Okay. You know, we touched on this a moment ago about the European Union. Let's talk about the European Union, which, of course, first came under, I will say, scrutiny and concern with the announcement by and the decision by the United Kingdom to exit, resulting in, of course, as we refer to it every day, Brexit. But what's the status of that? We've talked about the challenges in Spain. One has to wonder what's the future of the European Union with these challenges in other countries. But what about the and of course, the gorilla in the room, the big concern is the European, or pardon me, United Kingdom. What's the future of Brexit at this point?
Well, it's going to be discussed at the European Heads of Government Summit in a couple of weeks' time. I think it's the 19th of October. And at that summit, that is the deadline they set to resolve the initial problems. And those initial problems in Northern Ireland, European nationals in Britain, British nationals in Europe, and the size of the divorce bill, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
It will not be resolved. It will not be resolved in time for that summit. And they're already talking about postponing a decision or a resolution of those problems to the next summit on the 14th of December. Now, if it's not, if those issues are not resolved by the 14th of December, I don't see how they could possibly meet the two-year deadline to right. negotiate a new trade deal.
At this point, the British exit from the European Union, has it had any impact on the European Union? It sounds to me like it's almost status quo.
No, it's not status quo. It has had an impact.
Okay.
It's actually encouraged the Federalist in Europe to move forward more quickly towards greater political and military integration. Britain has traditionally been a brake on European integration. And now with Britain off the scene, these Federalists are saying, right, let's go. Let's go for it.
Well, you know, isn't that...
Those chains have been thrown off.
All right. Is that not part of the greater globalization then? Aren't there folks that are happy?
Yes, and certainly there is a backlash within Europe.
Okay.
And that's why you have things like the Alternative for Deutschland.
Right.
And the five-star movement in Italy. But they have been defeated, in a sense, by the rather poor showing of Marine Le Pen in France.
Mm-hmm.
She was expecting to do much better. The poor showing by Geert Wilders in Holland.
Right.
They have been strengthened by the better than expected showing of the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany and the worse than expected result for Angela Merkel.
But the results of that...
But basically, the European Federalists are on a high at the moment.
Okay, but as a result, even Chancellor Merkel has adjusted her approach to the immigrants and refugee problem. Is that still not one of the primary concerns with this anti-globalist group, that they're very frightened of these continued
yes.
incursions? Okay.
Yes, of course. Of course. The problem is, as I said when I was talking about my column, it's holding back the tides of history and trying to find a middle way
right.
that you can move forward in globalizing and greater interdependence, which has lots of positive benefits, at the same time help people to retain their national identity.
It's going to be interesting to see how that approaches. All right. We've had that very situation here in the States. And of course, it took a civil war, unfortunately, to eliminate much of that. We won't get into that discussion today with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Staying with Britain for just a quick moment. You've made a note here, low-cost airlines in a mess. What's happening to the British airways?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Lockwood, do you have many low-cost airlines in the States, huh?
Yes, yes. And they are very aggressive, but they are also having a hard time, competing. The majors have seen the benefits of low cost by cramming more people into the airplanes. What's the status there in the UK?
Well, there's several big ones, but two of the biggest are Ryanair and Monarch.
Mm-hmm.
Monarch has just gone bust.
Ah.
And 800,000 people have lost their flight bookings.
Wow.
And 110,000 of them are overseas. Now, they're covered by a travel agency or travel insurance, So, you know, they will get some of their money back and they will all be flown back to Britain. Ryanair, I think, is even more interesting. Ryanair is notorious for cutting out every conceivable frill and then some.
Right, right.
They save money. I mean, if you carry anything more than hand luggage onto the plane, and in their case, the hand luggage is the size of a small handbag or a large wallet. They don't allow anything bigger than that. You have to pay extra for it.
Oh, wow.
You have to... If you want a glass of water, you have to pay for it. You know, it's everything. You have to pay for all your food extra and so forth.
We're seeing this now even with the majors in the United States. And I say major airlines where they're doing the same thing. So,
They started, obviously, they were cutting back their back office facilities as well at Ryanair.
Right.
Because they've had to cancel 400,000 bookings.
Ooh.
Because they forgot to take into account that their pilots were going to go on vacation.
Wow. So it is a mess. What would you suggest to anyone flying to Europe? Take a major airline, I guess, and anywhere in the UK?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's the message. All right, moving on. Again, Tom Arms with lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Related to employees, let's talk about France again. And I know that President Emmanuel Macron announced that he was going to address the issue of the rather lucrative labor market in France. I think the typical work week is somewhere between 20 and 30 hours a week. But I see that there's a big strike protest for new labor laws. Tell us about this. We've got about 3 minutes to go.
Okay. Well, next Tuesday, there's going to be a strike by the all nine of the public service unions. And it's the first time that all nine public service unions have gone on strike at the same time for 10 years. So this is a big thing in France. And what they're going on strike about is that not only is he introducing these labor reform laws, but he's cutting 120,000 jobs out of the French public service sector.
You know, I think
and he's freezing their pay as well.
I think President Macron and President Trump have a lot in common. Do you not think so?
Well, they do over some things, you know. I mean, maybe that's why Macron invited him to Bastille Day celebrations.
Must be. They must have conversed. All right. This is going to be a real challenge. Very quickly to move on to other things. What is the perception of President Macron? He was considered, quite frankly, the new face of politics and Europe. Is he still, does he still have that, I'll use the word, cachet, that appearance?
Within France, he's losing a lot of approval. He's dropping in the approval ratings. He's under 50%. He did start off at, I think, 74% approval ratings. So, you know, he's basically using his huge majority to really crack down as hard as he can, as fast as he can. I don't know if you ever read Machiavelli's The Prince, but his advice to the princes, as he says, is to give the bad news quickly and soon in your administration.
Right.
I mean, the bad news quickly and soon in your administration. And then let the good news sort of drip out over the year.
And they'll forget about the bad
news.
And
I think that's what Macron is doing.
All right. We're chatting with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As you heard just a few moments ago, he has a weekly blog. We'll give you details on that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. please, please, Mr. Trump, think twice before opening your mouth next week. Think again before opening your Twitter account, and a fourth time before turning away from the teleprompter to extemporaneously voice your thoughts. Carefully consider all the options that Rex Tillerson says he has prepared for you. And think about what General Mattis told Congress about the wisdom of scrapping the Iran nuclear deal. At stake is so much more than the appeasement of your political base and the fulfillment of a shoot-from-the-hip, vote-catching campaign promise. Your decision will have repercussions on relations in the wider Middle East, with North Korea, Europe, and America's standing in just about every corner of the world. Let's start with the pressing problem of North Korea. You want, everyone wants, a deal which denuclearizes North Korea. But agreements involve at least two sides, and requires both to stick to the deal and be known as the sort of government which keeps its promises. Agreed, North Korea has a bad record in that department. But China doesn't. As you have repeatedly said, with China on your side, North Korea could be forced into keeping its part of the bargain. Even the most vocal opponents of the Iran nuclear deal reluctantly acknowledge that Tehran has kept to the letter of the agreement. If you break it, then why should China or North Korea believe that you will keep your word in any arrangement with Pyongyang? For that matter, why should Europe believe that you will keep your word as a member of NATO? Why should the South Koreans and Japanese sleep more soundly in their beds? Why should your hundreds of trading partners across the globe, who help to keep hundreds of millions of Americans employed, clothed, and fed, believe that you will stick to any agreement? Next, there's the wider Middle East. Scrapping the Iran nuclear deal strengthens the position of Iranian hardliners. President Hassan Rouhani has said that he will stick to Iran's side of the bargain regardless. But there are real doubts that he can hold back the fundamentalists who have a stranglehold on the military. If Iran develops nuclear weapons, it will completely destroy the balance of power in the Middle East. Israel will feel more threatened, for sure, but so will Iraq, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Kuwait, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and NATO ally Turkey. Do you respond to Iranian nuclear weapons by extending the U.S. nuclear umbrella to those countries? Or feed the dangerous dragon of nuclear proliferation by giving them the technology to build their own weapons? Over the past few weeks, European ambassadors have been trooping in and out of the White House and the State Department, urging you to renew the agreement with Iran. This is for several reasons. One is that Britain, France, and Germany, along with Russia and China, are co-signatories to the Iran nuclear deal. They have lifted sanctions and at great expense and effort have re-established political and trading links. America is powerful enough to ignore the strongly held views of the co-signatories, but to do so would be to rub the noses of your allies in the unpalatable fact that their participation in the agreement is no more than diplomatic window dressing. President Rouhani has said that he expects Washington to scrap the deal. If it does, he will simply carry on dealing with Europe, Russia, and China without the U.S. This is partly because Iran needs the markets, goods, and services which Europe provides. But there's also a geopolitical reason. Throughout the Cold War, the Soviet Union tried to decouple the United States from Europe. Russia has inherited this policy. Iran and Russia are now political allies. A split between Europe and America over Iran would only serve Russia's long-cherished ambitions and increase the political and military pressure that Moscow can exert on the rest of Europe. You may not like to admit it, but you need Europe. It is more than your biggest trading partner. It is a crucial staging post that allows America to extend political influence in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. How much more difficult would it be to protect Israel or Saudi oil fields if you had to do so entirely from Norfolk, Virginia? When presenting policy options to political masters, American diplomats generally present three choices. 1. Nuke 'em. 2. Do nothing. 3. Something in between which the diplomat secretly desires. Please go for number 2.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Wrapping it up with you, Tom, there are several issues I want to talk on. One serious note here. We've seen stories on this as well. Iran is trying to improve relations with Europe in anticipation of the Trump nuclear deal agreement, and the fact that President Trump is considering, revisiting that deal and possibly canceling it. Of course, recently the Secretary of Defense and I think the Secretary of State have all suggested that the U.S. maintain its current arrangement with Iran. How is Iran trying to improve relations with Europe, and how receptive is Europe to Iran?
Europe is very receptive to Iran.
Oh.
There was a meeting a week or so ago. All the European ambassadors trooped into the White House and told Trump in no uncertain terms that we want to keep the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if the U.S. pulled out, Europe would keep trading with Iran. And the Iranians have said that if Europe does keep trading, we will stick to our part of the bargain. We will not develop nuclear weapons if Europe keeps trading with us. Now, I was raised in the Cold War, and one of the major issues of the Cold War was the decoupling of the U.S. and Europe. And that was a major thing that the Soviets wanted to do, was to decouple Europe and the U.S. Well, Iran now is quite closely allied with Moscow, and I think this is probably part of an effort to decouple the U.S. from Europe.
Very interesting. All right, I want to move on to something very quickly since we brought up the word nuclear. The issue of North Korea and the U.S. government, what's the feeling there about the U.S. government's approach to North Korea? Very quickly, good, bad, or indifferent?
Europeans can't understand what's happening. We were talking, and this ties in with Iran. You have Tillerson going off to China and saying, we're making progress, we're making progress. And then Trump immediately tweets, the time for talking has stopped.
Well, that's now. Wait. I don't want to try to parse that. It's just, I think that this is one of those situations where, quite frankly, we've watched governments in the past try to work with North Korea to no avail. And I can appreciate, and this is a personal...
No, you're missing my point.
You're missing my point, Lockwood. And your point is?
And the point is that who speaks for the government on foreign affairs? And why doesn't the government speak with one voice? You've got Trump saying, we're not going to talk. The time for talking is gone. You got Tillerson saying we're making good progress with talks.
You know what?
Now, when we talk about Iran, you've got Trump hinting very strongly that he's going to end the nuclear deal and reimpose sanctions. And you got Tillerson and Mattis saying, no, we should continue them.
Very quickly.
Surely the government should speak with one voice.
Well, you failed to recognize that here in the States, we have a program called Good Cop, Bad Cop. We'll not get into that discussion at this point, but I thought it was interesting.
Well, Bad Cop is also very confusing.
Well, for the rest
of the world.
Oh, okay. Very interesting observation. I want to wrap it up with you very quickly. Himalayan villages build ice mountains. Let's wrap it up with this last story.
They've got a real problem in the Himalayan villages with the glaciers receding. Mm-hmm. And these glaciers used to provide them during the summer, spring and summer months, with all the water they needed for drinking and their agriculture and everything else. So they don't have that water. The Himalayan villages are drying up, literally. And so what they're doing during the winter is they are building ice mountains. They're taking the ice from the glaciers and from the rivers during the winter months and making ice mountains up to 200 feet high, man-made. And then they plant them next to where the rivers are. And as they melt, they feed the rivers.
That is entrepreneurship of the highest order. I'm intrigued by this. Himalayan villages build ice mountains. Our guest this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, just log on to LookAheadNews.com, become a regular reader of Tom's, and no charge, you can read his columns every week. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us. Look forward to chatting with you next week.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.